From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Claire Strempel with a quick look at your local and statewide news. Transgender youth face challenges in school that most students don't, like finding a gender-neutral bathroom or asking to be called by a different name. To help students learn how to get what they need, the Zach Gordon Youth Center and the Juno branch of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Juno, or NAMI, has created new guides for Juno middle school and high school students. Meryl Connolly Chu is program coordinator for NAMI Juno.
You know, it can be like hard enough and scary enough to be a kid at school trying to figure things out. And then if you add in the piece of being a trans or gender diverse young person and potentially not having a supportive adult at home who's helping you.
The guides have answers to questions like how to handle name changes, negotiating activities that are typically gender segregated, and what to do if someone disrespects a student's identity. And they explain how to navigate those problems in each of the district's middle and high schools, including lists of people students may need to know, like counselors, principals, and registrars. They also include an explanation of the district's non-discrimination policy, written for students.
It just really became clear to us that we need to simplify some of the school district's anti-discrimination policy into a way that young people can understand and use for themselves.
The booklets debuted at the Zach's Trans Youth Advocacy Workshop earlier this month. There, trans youth were able to ask questions and hear from school staff and the people who put the booklets together. Next week, the Zach and NAMI Juno are hosting a webinar about the guides. This one is for family members, teachers, or school staff who want to better support transgender students in Juno.
Okay, you are the trusted adult. So what can you do and how might you support a young person if they come to you and say, you're my trusted adult. I need help with this thing.
The guides can be picked up at the Zach Gordon Youth Center or found online at namijuno.org/LGBTQ2. Alaskans are headed to the polls today for their first chance to rank candidates in the special U.S. House general election, as well as to decide who will be ranked in November. It's two elections on one piece of paper. On one side, the primary election, where voters pick one candidate for governor, U.S. House, U.S. Senate, and state House and Senate seats. On the flip side, the ranked choice election to decide who will fill the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early visited several polling locations this morning and has more.
Thousands of Alaskans have already voted by mail or went to the polls early ahead of Election Day. Still, on Tuesday morning, voter turnout was pretty steady at Turnagain United Methodist Church in Anchorage.
We've had 101 people who have come through and voted already.
Poll worker Deborah Caldera said by 9:30, more than 130 ballots had been cast. Caldera has been a poll worker for 10 years, and she says even with the new voting system, turnout is about the same.
This is a busy precinct, and one of the busiest in the city. And I would say that we have about what we had normally here.
Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer, who's charged with overseeing Alaska elections, was out Tuesday morning visiting polling locations. He said Alaska's first ranked choice election seemed to be going okay.
You know, some places said it wasn't a problem, and others said, yeah, there was some confusion.
In addition to the new system, Meyer says some voters have to contend with new district boundaries and a bunch of new polling locations. But he says everything seems to be running as smooth as past elections he's overseen.
Yeah, whenever you have over 2,000 basically volunteers, there's going to be some startup issues, like I said, in the morning in particular. And then once you get up and running, things go fairly smoothly, or they work themselves out.
In the primary, voters pick one choice. The top four candidates who receive the most votes move on to the November general election. Meyer said since nearly all legislative races have less than four candidates, the stakes are much lower for those candidates.
The big one that everybody's going to, of course, be watching is the interim fill of Don Young's seat. Because now all of a sudden they become the incumbent.
After Young died in March, a special primary was held to determine which candidates would compete to replace him. In Tuesday's ranked choice special general election, voters will rank either Sarah Palin, Nick Begich, Mary Peltola, or one of six registered write-in candidates. Not everyone is a fan of the new ranked choice system. Outside the elections office polling area in Anchorage, Nancy Tinney described herself as an independent voter. She said she's worried that ranked choice will split the vote on certain candidates.
So people will go in there and they'll rank all these people, and what it's doing is taking away a percentage. Why not just yes or no for one person?
In the ranked choice election, voters rank their preferences of the candidates who are running. If a candidate receives less than 50% of first round votes, then the last place person is eliminated and their second place votes go to the remaining candidates. In the end, Tinney said she only ranked one U.S. House candidate, Palin. Barbara Hole is another voter who isn't very supportive of ranked choice voting. She voted at the same place as Tinney and said she was taken aback by the vast number of names on her ballot. There are 22 candidates running in just the U.S. House primary, 19 for the U.S. Senate, and 10 candidates for governor.
It's very confusing. I like it much better to be able to say this is who's going to be the Republican Party, Independent Party, and Democratic Party. I like the old school method much better.
Unlike Tinney, Hole did rank several candidates on her ballot. She wouldn't say who she put first.
I did not vote for Sarah Palin. Okay, let's put it that way.
While voters get used to a new system with just one race to call, Meyer is hopeful that it'll be an easy introduction to the new voting method. He calls it a test run for ranked choice voting in November. Polls will be open until 8 p.m. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Final results for today's statewide primary and the special election for the U.S. House won't be available until at least August 31st. The Alaska Beacon reports that Alaska law allows ballots mailed from overseas, such as from soldiers and students, to arrive up to 15 days after Election Day, as long as they are postmarked on or before that day. With ballots arriving as late as August 31st, elections officials here won't start counting until all the ballots are in. Some preliminary results will be available starting late Tuesday night. Those will show the first choices of voters, and the division is planning an update on August 23rd and another on August 26th before the final result at the end of the month. When Maine implemented ranked choice elections, the process involved trucking ballots to the state's election headquarters. In Alaska, that's not possible. There's no road to Juneau. Under the procedures used by the division, ballots will be scanned on Election Day, generating preliminary reports that will be released after polls close. In urban Alaska, the paper ballots will be locked up and transferred to one of the state's four regional supervisors, then picked up by contracted courier for a flight to division headquarters in Juneau. In rural Alaska, ballots will be sealed in envelopes and make it evident if they're tampered with, locked in containers, and shipped by U.S. Postal Service using package tracking, signature confirmation, and a signed check log. In about a quarter of the state's voting precincts, paper ballots are tallied by hand, and those ballots need to be scanned in order to tabulate votes on August 31st. The state verifies the results with a hand count of randomly selected precincts, but the hand count of the ranked choice voting results will be limited to only the voter's first choice. The division won't be verifying the rankings by hand. The officials in charge of elections say that could take weeks, if not months. GCI is in the process of laying hundreds of miles of subsea fiber up the Aleutian Chain. The expansion of service will link parts of rural Alaska from Unalaska to Kodiak Island with high-speed internet. And as KMXT's Kristen Dobroth reports, Kodiak is a hub for the project.
Under the sea, there's a massive web of fiber that connects communities around the globe to the World Wide Web via high-speed internet. In Alaska, that fiber zigzags on the ocean floor around southeast. And further north in the Gulf of Alaska, a separate line comes down from Homer and dead ends at Kodiak Island. At least it used to. Late last month, communications company GCI started laying 800 miles of fiber from Unalaska up the Aleutian Chain with the goal of connecting six additional communities, including Larsen Bay on Kodiak Island, to high-speed internet by 2024.
It's a huge project for us and for the state of Alaska.
That's GCI Rural Affairs Director Jen Nelson. The undertaking is called the AU Aleutians Fiber Project, and Nelson says Kodiak is an important piece of the puzzle. While one ship makes its way at 2 miles per hour laying fiber up the Alaskan Peninsula, another vessel, the IT Integrity, was off Kodiak's Mill Bay Beach last week, hooking up another 80 miles of fiber that will eventually stretch from the city to the village of Larsen Bay.
So it's extending from the infrastructure that is currently in Kodiak. So that is home base for this project.
The massive project involves both laying new fiber and clearing out old debris on the seafloor. Nelson says GCI has pulled up long-abandoned fishing equipment and a telegraph line from 1908 as part of the cleanup. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
You're listening to KTOO.